Beautiful. Say, tell me what you had for breakfast so I can set your levels.
What did I have for breakfast? I had zucchini bread and raspberries.
Ooh.
And a nice cup of coffee.
Perfect. And your levels are awesome. Okay, we are good to go.
Excellent.
All right. So, well, I just can't even believe I'm talking to this brilliant artist.
Oh, you're too kind.
Oh, I'm telling you. I just, there's so many things I want to know, including your thinking in deciding to present these women in the way that you did rather than, say, in action, you know, at a
right.
mass.
Yeah.
But first, I think I'd like to invite you to tell us what you wrote in the article, pretty much, about your own background.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us.
Well, I grew up in a very committed Catholic community in Germany, in Verden, Essen-Verden, which is kind of a nice little Catholic stronghold. It was found in 899 by Saint, well, I don't know how to say it in English, Ludgerus, in a kind of more Protestant area other than that. So it's a very kind of rich culture around Catholicism in Germany there. And I really loved growing up with those traditions and with that faith. I went to an all-girl Catholic school, and again, it was, you know, a lovely school. I was very close to my principal, who was a nun. It's the Sisters of the Sacred Heart, I believe, that's what it's called in English.
Okay.
It was not until I was, you know, 16, 17, that I started to feel a little bit more rebellious and kind of had trouble seeing my role as a young woman within the church, and I questioned some things off the church.
Sure. Understandably.
Yeah. And that got me thinking in mm-hmm. a lot of I guess different directions.
Did you stay in the church?
You know, I'm not a practicing Catholic. No, my family's certainly still is, but I'm not.
So you obviously still have some interest in the Catholic Church.
Well, I'm very grateful for the way I grew up, you know, and it was a lovely, lovely childhood that was very much connected to the Catholic Church.
Well, how did it happen that you landed on this subject?
Well, I think it had two different angles. Like, one was, you know, my kind of personal struggle. Like, what was it really that kind of turned me away from something that had so much positive things for me growing up? You know, getting older, you see things a little bit clearer, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it was that I really kind of felt that there wasn't a place for me with being an independent thinker and trying to do my own thing and deciding personal things in my life with the amount of freedom that I think I should have. And I studied history, and I was always very interested in feminism. And looking at it today, it's like I feel like what is it that we're still not quite equal? Mm-hmm. And I think the lack of female spiritual leadership is a strong part in that. And, you know, Simone de Beauvoir talks about, you know, that one reason why women have trouble, or the society as a whole has trouble at seeing women in leadership roles, is the lack of iconography. Mm. I tried to, you know, when I came across these women, I try to think about how I can portray them in that sense to really kind of encompass their amazing spirituality and also kind of equalize them with male spiritual leaders and, you know, the kind of inspiration you know, I'm hesitant in comparing myself to that, but that was certainly the inspiration at like Renaissance paintings of Titian or Velasquez, where they, you know, in that beautiful lighting and.
Oh yeah.
And so I try to emulate that a little bit. That was kind of the thought behind it.
Okay. But backing up a little, you say when I came across these women or crossed paths with these women, how did that happen?
You know, I read a short article in the New York Times Magazine, I think it was in 2008, that mentioned, you know, Catholic women priests. And I, you know, I was like, well, what do you mean, Catholic women priests? So I started really keeping my eyes open to, like, what was reported about them. And finally,
because it spoke to you somehow. It was, like, resonant.
Very much so, yeah, very much so. And it was very surprising, you know, that it was like...
It was surprising that it resonated, or it was surprising that it was a phenomenon that was happening?
Both, certainly both, you know. So, yeah, and it was you know, I looked them up, you know, the usual way these days. I Googled Catholic women priests, and I contacted them, and they were very, you know, open to me coming in and talking to them, and that's how it started.
Did you attend any services led by them?
Yes, I did. I did Gabriella, I should look up the name, Gabriella Willardi.
I know just who you mean, because I went to a mass that she led just this past Sunday down in New York.
Yeah, she was, you know, she was the one in New York, and that's where I'm based, so... No, I think Aline DeFranco put me in touch with her, and we met and had a wonderful conversation. And and I went to the ordination of Teresa Novak Chabot up in Rochester in the Corpus Christi.
How did that make you feel to attend an ordination? It's kind of, I understand, a powerful, even with men, it's a powerful experience.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, I've never attended a male ordination, so I have no point of reference there. And the ordination itself wasn't, I think, what impacted me that much, because I just didn't have that reference point. But just to see these, you know, incredible women on the altar and celebrating Mass was just, it really caught me by surprise how impactful that was.
Yeah. Were you able to focus your camera?
I was, and I was so grateful to have it. You know,
yes.
It was just like, wow. You know, I can actually capture this. You know, that was really amazing.
Did you take any pictures of them lying on the floor?
I did. Yeah, they have not been published yet, so we'll see what happens with that.
Now, along those lines, I'm just curious. Not that we need to put you in a category, but do you think of yourself as a journalist or an artist or an activist? I mean, what is your take on?
Well, I hope all of the above. Mm-hmm. You know, at least that's, I think, you know, I'm a photojournalist.
Yes.
You know.
And you teach photography.
I do.
At Columbia?
At Columbia and at the International Center of Photography.
Okay.
Both in New York, yeah. I think you can't disconnect those. You know, like, I think photojournalism, and when you look at the tradition of it, it's very much bound with social activism. You know, that's what it's about, really.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual portraits and, like I say, the choices you made about how to pose the women and what to have them wear. And there's this beautiful print pink scarf, which... shows up, does it show up in more than one, or are they different scarves?
They're different scarves. They all have their own. I don't quite remember, but one woman made this kind of similar scarf for a bunch of them. I did not dress them up.
Oh.
Those are their robes.
And,
you know, at least I would say half of them were taken in Rochester at the ordination.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I set up a little background. You know, I chose the background. It's like a rich blue velvet, which, you know, comes that's what I kind of felt like, that it, they might have had, you know, in Renaissance painting. And but that, those were the robes they were wearing to celebrate the ordination.
Okay.
And a couple of them, like Patricia Friesen, I photographed in her apartment in Stuttgart in Germany.
Yes.
And she was so kind to put on the robes that she does use when she ordains women or celebrates Mass. So those are all their own things, and that's they're priestly robes. They're not something that I brought along for them to dress up in.
Mm-hmm. One, I couldn't help observing one woman's kind of little satin shoes poking out.
I know, isn't she fabulous?
Yes. Well, you know, you've met all of these women priests, many more than I'm sure the average, even Catholic, has run across. So what is your general impression of these women and their, I don't know what to say, I don't want to ask you to judge their spirituality, but just tell me a little bit about how they struck you.
They're amazing. They really are amazing. You know, and different, of course, and but
different from each other.
Right, different from each other. And they, you know, with kind of different takes. The one that probably impacted me the most is Patricia Friesen.
She has quite a story.
It's really unbelievable, and she has, you know, such an amazing disposition and the way she talks about her journey. And you know, I interviewed not all of them, but a handful of them. And you know, one thing that I asked all of them. Was whether and how they felt called to priesthood, which is something that I ran across in a, you know, fierce conversation with a very conservative friend of mine who's, you know, Catholic, and I who said to me when I started the story and said, well, women just simply can't be called to priesthood. That's just not possible. And that struck me as such a core issue in this. I say, like, that just doesn't sound right. How can you deny women, or can you say that God wouldn't call women to priesthood? That doesn't make any sense. And the responses of these women were just so wonderful and so convincing. You know, there weren't, you know, a lot of them said, you know, it was the people who called me, you know, it was my community that encouraged me, or, you know, that they really kind of felt that urge from early childhood on, and sometimes they couldn't even put a finger on it, like they just felt this, you know, and it just felt so genuine and so, you know, I don't even know if I believe in it, like it's not, you know, that my spirituality is in any way on their level, you know, it's, I don't, but it just the conviction that they have that that's not something, you know, like a job choice or whatever, but that's truly something that God called them to do.
Yes.
It's really, really amazing.
Well, you know, it's funny you should be describing it that way, because at the Mass with Gabriella, what struck me was just how absolutely normal it felt for her to be, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there just didn't seem, it's like, what would be the problem with this?
Yes, yes.
It really?
For me, again, more of a personal experience, you know, I haven't really been to church in many years, and I can't really recall having had any form of relationship with a spiritual leader within the Catholic Church that I felt like that I could talk to or, you know, seek out for advice in my spiritual life. And, you know, most of these women, and I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, but it's like just simply because there are women makes it so much easier for me as a woman to accept them as spiritual guides.
Right.
And what an opportunity that is for women, you know.
Oh, yeah. It just has to happen. I mean, it's starting to feel urgent to me. Because girls are growing up.
Yeah.
Quickly. They need this.
You know? Yeah, that's you know, again, like I hesitate to you know, define myself as Catholic, and for me the feminist issue is more urgent in this matter, because when you look at the numbers, I mean, I'm still doing research, and when I come across it, like one number just is so amazing to me. There are 4 million, around 4 million babies born in the U.S. every year.
Yeah.
700,000 of, you know, 700,000 babies are baptized within the Catholic Church every year, and these 700,000 children grow up, you know, these formative years, looking up at the altar, just seeing men,
right,
as in these leadership positions. And, you know, that is just so problematic when you look at it. Like, it's for girls that they obviously see themselves inferior, because, you know, I can't stand up there, therefore there must be something wrong with
right.
me. I'm inferior to them. And also the boys.
You right.
know, like, obviously I'm superior, because if I want to, I do get to stand up.
Yes.
And that's a societal problem. It's not just the issue of the Catholic Church. That's a women's rights issue that is really needs to be addressed.
Really? And the logic that we're getting out of Rome, having to do with Jesus only having picked male apostles. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, can we not make adjustments for the times?
Well, I don't even think that, you know, when you look at the research, like, and I'm not a theologian, so I you know, I shouldn't.
This is above your pay grade, you're saying?
Yeah. Well, it's, and I, you know, I think you might be able to get somebody who can talk about that a little bit more intelligently than I do. But it's like there's so much research and so much proof now that the women were so involved and so...
Yes.
impactful on,
right.
on the early church, you know, and then, you know, the whole Mary Magdalene thing, like,
right.
you know, when you start analyzing what happened after and, you know, making her into a prostitute, which is like very clearly not the case, to kind of, you know, take away that power from her.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's not just the facts, you know.
Right.
That might be gotten, you know, it's just like there might have been women apostles. That's a very, very good hypothesis that is becoming, you know, pretty believable.
Right, right.
But you should interview somebody else about
right.
that.
Okay. Well, let's get back to photography then.
Great.
You know, as much as you do point out, and I see your point that they're all different from each other, there still seems to be kind of a quality about them when you look at the portraits. Kind of something about them. Maybe this was a conscious decision on your part to not have, I don't know, it seems like they're all of a piece in their expression, their thoughtfulness, almost prayerfulness. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, they're very spiritual women, you know. That's what I wanted to capture in
yeah.
this. You know, they're
and
very
there's an
powerful,
intelligence.
Very spiritual women. Yes.
Yeah, you can tell that they're thinking people.
Yes.
And compassion. I mean, all of the qualities that you want in a priest are on exhibit there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I encourage you to look at their little bios, you know, either on their website or also with the photos. I mean, they are all highly qualified.
Right.
You know, most of them have at least a master in theology or the likes, and have worked in their parishes for years.
I'm sure some of them have trained priests.
Patricia Friesen has. She has. She taught at the St. Augustine University in South Africa. She taught men how to be priests and how to preach for years.
I mean, what to say?
Agreed. And she trains the women now. Like, she's kind of the heart and soul of their program when it comes to preparing new women for ordination.
I think she ordained Gabriella, yes? Have I got that right?
I believe, I'm not certain about
I
that.
Think
she
so.
Did. I do know that she ordained Andrea Johnson.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not certain who ordained Gabriella.
Are you
in my notes?
Are you planning a book?
I'm very I don't know yet. I'm not certain where this story is going to go. The feedback I get is wonderful and
oh good.
So encouraging. The responses have been wonderful. I might divert from the Catholic subject line because I think it is also an issue that happens in a lot of other very prominent Western religions.
Ah.
You know, like Islam and
yeah.
Mormons and,
yeah.
you know, even the Lutheran churches, even when they do allow women, they don't really exactly give them a free path. You know, it's like it's definitely like the working title for this project for me, which starts to sound a little silly, but it's like the last domain. You know, it's really a kind of a
yeah.
domain where women just haven't quite reached the levels they might have done in other areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like it's at all informed your own spiritual life? I mean, do you feel like a different person having pursued this at all?
Oh, certainly. I mean, just the experience of being able to meet these women was amazing. And you know, it's like there's a little hope. You know, it's like I don't see a way back into the Catholic Church as it is right now.
Right.
But you know, if that kind of work is happening, and if they you know do wake up and you know look at the people and what the people actually need.
Yeah.
Then you know maybe.
Right. Well, it might be too much to ask for in our lifetimes. I hate
yeah,
to be pessimistic.
Maybe, but you know, I think that's what you always say when you ask for change. You know, there,
yeah.
when you challenge the status quo, you always think it's never going to happen or not that soon. It takes
yeah.
a long time. But you know, I think these women have made incredible strides, and you know, people are paying attention, and they're seeing the reasoning in that. So maybe in our lifetime.
You know, it's funny, now that we're talking about it, I'm recalling a priest I knew. You know, they're always rotating the crop, so he's no longer the pastor at the church where I used to know him, but he said, the church will keep saying no women priests right up until the point where they say, okay, women priests.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it's going to have to do with. It might have to do with money. Personnel, lack of other priests. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's not a bad reason.
Well, you know, whatever it is,
yeah.
it won't come down to principle.
I think the current pope will just lose too much face, you know, to go that step.
As a German, considering that he's also German, do you have any particular thoughts about Benedict?
I don't think we can put that was on record.
It's a family radio show.
No, it's very disappointing. I wish I could be proud of that.
Yeah.
You know, I really wish I could be proud of that. You know, there is, I'm sure you know, Hans Küng, who
yeah.
is kind of the nemesis of Benedict. And I sometimes fantasize that if stars would have aligned differently, he might have been Pope now,
you
know, and he would have. That we would have, our history would be sounding a little differently.
Oh, imagine! Oh gosh! Oh, yeah. Theologians are taking it on the chin generally, lately, from the Vatican, weirdly.
I'm not sure I know.
Well, you know, for instance, there's a woman theologian. Oh, her name's flown out of my brain, but she wrote a book 5 or 6 years ago about sexual morality, and the Vatican has only now discovered it and pretty much banned it and condemned it and said it's, you know, not Catholic enough. And, you know, she's like, you know what, this is theology. This is how we do it, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, my very personal and not theologian perception of that is I think Jesus was all about love and all kinds of it.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a beautiful note to end on.
Well, thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before I let you get back to your real life?
No, thank you so much for asking to talk to me. This was wonderful. And let me know. I don't know much about your show. So
well, I'll tell you. This is all pre-recorded, so I can edit off this little bit here. But it's called Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith. And it was born in reaction to the Republican primary season this past winter, when Rick Santorum and his ilk, including Paul Ryan, were going off on subjects like birth control, for instance. It's like, really, are we really in this year? What decade are we in? We're really talking about birth control? I mean, it just was embarrassing to be Catholic. And here he was speaking for Catholics as if he's the standard bearer, you know? And in fact, there's lots and lots of conservative commentary, and not really any, or not much. Maybe in print there's a few left-leaning Catholic periodicals, but you don't ever hear the other. I mean, my friends and I are pretty progressive-minded Catholic parishes. Thank goodness here in Connecticut we've been able to find a parish where they have a certain point of view that we can live with, you know. It's very socially conscious. We have a sister parish in Haiti. We're always, like, stocking the soup kitchen and the food pantry and feeling useful. And we have, you know, we welcome gays and they bring up the gifts, you know. I mean, so I wasn't seeing any of that kind of Catholicism reflected in the discourse. So around that time came across my computer an invitation to come down to the Wesleyan University radio station and learn the ropes and perhaps have a show if the topic you're interested in does not get a fair airing other places, which was absolutely the case with this.
Yeah. Very
much. So I did. I came down. I took the classes. I learned the ropes. Proposed the show. They said, sure. So now here I am, like, pretending to be a radio person.
Well, you're doing great.
Well, thanks. I mean, I have a little background in journalism because I was a newspaper reporter for some many years.
What paper did you
The work? Providence Journal in Rhode Island. So, and now I teach freshman composition at a university locally. But anyway, the weird thing, which I can't resist telling you because it's so kind of, I don't know, cosmic, is that, a few weeks ago, a month ago, I was just kind of hanging here at the station. I got talking with the general manager, and I said, was it you? Are you the one who sent out that email inviting people to come and learn the ropes? And he said, what email? I said, no, you know, well, because I got this. He said, no, nobody sent that. I said, wait a minute. I mean, I know it. I came and it must have come from somewhere. He goes, no, look, we have enough members of the community already. We wouldn't be looking for extra personnel here.
Well, did you find the email?
I did not. I cannot figure it out.
Well, sometimes you have to take that.
You know? It's like, really? I mean, come on. Is this real? And really, aside from the technical difficulties, which you've already experienced with me.
Oh, that was pretty minor. I used to do phone interviews for for my old job all the time, and believe me, people had to be way more patient than I had.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's kind of you. But really, it has been like falling off a log, except for the technical stuff. I mean, ideas are coming, and people are willing, and it's just been almost preternaturally easy to do
that's
this
great.
Thing, which makes me feel like it just wants doing. I mean, do you get a sense of that in your own work, that something is in sync with the universe?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a very pragmatic, logical person.
Yes. Well, you're German.
Okay, I'll take it.
That's
but it's,
not
you
nice.
You know, just, I mean, I've been, you know, I've been on and off working on the story for a long time.
How long?
You know, I started thinking about it in 2008, started kind of photographing in 2010, and, you know, not continuously, but I had a child in 2008, so left my old job, and I'm teaching too, so it's hard to find time for it and really put it, package it the way that I would love it to be.
Right.
And, I read in the New York Times the front page article from when Karen King showed her discovery of the papyrus, right?
Yes, right.
And it's, you know, not that that really changes anything. It's it's problematic. It's not like the ultimate proof. Like, no, we have proof that,
right.
You know, but it brought it into the discussion. So there's, you know, this thing like the news pack.
Right.
I was very, very busy. School just started again, and my classes started again, and I really didn't have time to really concentrate on the story, but I was like, this is the time. Like, you got to get your story out there. It might not be perfect yet, and you might still want to get an interview with it and this person, but you have a lot of material. Just get it out there.
Right,
and
right.
I called the editor of the Sunday Review, where I felt that was a good place for it, because I really like to put things into bigger context, and said, hey, take a look, you know, what do you think? And they loved it and ran it that week.
Wow.
You know, it was a crazy week, as you can imagine, for
yes.
me. But, you know, it was really, I emailed him, like, after an exhausting day in the middle of the night, and said, I'm just going to go ahead and email him, whatever. And it was really, you know, it wasn't a very well thought out, you know, over weeks put it together decision, which
right.
is kind of more my approach to things.
Right.
It was a very kind of overtired, spontaneous decision. That's interesting.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it really, none of the seams are showing. I don't know how to say it. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful collection of portraits.
Oh, thank you so much.
Really?
Did you read the blog that critiqued it?
No.
You got to check it out. If you search for my name in Google under the blog tab,
okay,
you'll find it. It's on this website. I think it's called Patheo or something like that. They have spiritual blogs, like religious blogs, but from all kind of denominations. But there is this woman who wrote this, fierce response, how ridiculous it is that women were dressing up at Pope as priests, and they were playing dress up, and how could anybody take this seriously? And I wish they couldn't put comments on, and I was a little hesitant to go there, but I was like thinking to myself, like, good point. That's what I think when I see cardinals, you know, and archbishops how is that different? Like, how could you?
Well, you know what? It raises an interesting question about whether it isn't a better idea to dress different from these guys.
You know, I think it's irrelevant. You know,
really?
Honestly, I think and I have a certain sentimentality towards them being dressed like that because that's what I grew up with, you know, and it makes me feel at home, you know, when I see it. And I think that's appealing to a lot of people, because especially when you don't feel it and haven't felt at home in the Catholic Church, and there's an alternative. And, you know, I liked the rituals growing up, you know.
I
was an altar girl.
Were you?
I was. You know,
May
and I
ask?
Liked the saints, and I liked the brombarium and the the you know, like celebrating it in a special way. I like that. You know, that's very much in my tradition. So why not?
Well, why not?
You know,
why throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Right.
They are beautiful.
Yeah, and it's, you know, they should inspire, you know,
right
in that way.
Right. Well, okay. I'm persuaded.
I mean, they don't need it. You know, most of them, when I interview them or whatever, they're just in their regular clothes. They're just as inspiring, you know.
Yes.
They certainly don't need it.
Do they wear a black shirt and a Roman collar, you know, to the supermarket?
No, I don't think so. I don't think any of them do. I mean, maybe, but I don't. They dress, you know, a little plainly, I would say, but, you know.
Yeah.
But no, they dress just regularly.
Did they have a feeling of hopefulness about the future for women priests being less of a illegal act, for lack of a better word?
Well, my sense is that they have very little hope that Benedict will welcome them.
Yeah.
That's not their they don't see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, you know, one question I asked them in the interview is like, if you would say tomorrow, all right, guys, come on in, mm-hmm. what would you do? And this, you know, I think Andrea Johnson with the most spirit said, like, that wouldn't change a thing.
Mm.
You know, because for them, that's not the only issue that needs to be reformed. The way they celebrate Mass is very inclusive.
Yes.
You know, they welcome everybody, gay or straight,
right.
you know,
right.
divorced or not. And they give communion to everybody. And, you know, it's more than they're true reformists. You know, they're not just.
So more about the church would have to change for them to just jump on board.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they're all, as you know, Benedict would say, radical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some are more than others, I would say. But all in all, I think they share this sentiment for in being inclusive to anybody.
Mm. Right.
That's the
language of the Mass on Sunday with Gabriella was just so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, they're really, like, they're just very considerate and deliberate in everything.
And tuned in, you know?
Yeah.
Very tuned in to what people are feeling and saying and thoughtful. She's a very intelligent person.
They all are.
Yeah.
You should continue talking. You should, you know.
Well, you know what I loved? I'm thinking now about, I can't tell you which one it was. I'm sure you'll know right off the bat. But in the blurb for one of the portraits,
mm-hmm.
the issue of excommunication came up. Mm-hmm. And the woman said, oh, we just ignore that.
That was Patricia Fraser. No doubt about it. I mean, they all say that. I mean, that's kind of their, you know, they obviously talk to each other and come to. But that's, I think that quote was from Patricia Fraser. You should contact, I mean, Patricia Friesen is wonderful, but she's in Germany, so it might be a little bit trickier, but you should try to interview, like, Andrea Johnson.
Yeah.
She's just very knowledgeable and just an inspiration in that regard.
Well,
I mean, they're all are. It's like, I don't want to play favorites.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Well, I might not have enough time in my 1 hour. Because I've got Gabriella, I've got you, I've got a priest in Connecticut. I want to put in some elements of the Mass I attended.
Mm-hmm.
I might run out of time. As it is, I'm worried about how I'm going to get all of our beautiful conversation into the show.
Oh, just cut me out.
No, my gosh, no, you're the star.
Oh, God. And it's a whole hour?
Well, there's so much to say.
where am I going to be able to be? Are you going to send me the link? Is it going to be online?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, you can go to the website. We have a website for the show if you're interested in some of the previous episodes.
Yes,
it's called
definitely.
ReasonablyCatholic.com. reasonablyamazing.com.
Reasonably. I'm going to put this in right now.
Okay. And there's only been 3 episodes, so it's so very newborn.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be the next show, and it'll air on the 30th, which should be a Tuesday, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I think so. Full text. Okay, here we go. Great.
And, oh, while I'm thinking of it, I imagine you have a photograph of yourself.
I really don't.
You don't? You don't have a little headshot I could put on the blog?
I'll look.
Have someone take a digital photo of you with the phone.
Well, that, you know, I am a photographer. That's not how it's going to work.
You know, somebody, it might have been Annie Leibovitz, said when she was asked, what's the best camera to use?
Mm-hmm.
She said, it's the camera that you actually will use.
Yeah, very much so.
I mean...
That's also a woman's answer, because women photographers are just not quite as tech geeky. Not saying that they can't handle the technology. That's not, but it's just not there.
Well, speaking of technique, and I'm just interested in your practice. Did you have to take a ton of shots of each of these women, or was it pretty easy? You know, they sat down, they looked at a book, that was it?
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, it's when you do portraits like that, and, you know, you think it through beforehand. You know,
yeah.
I played around with the background and tried to, you know, that might be an interesting little side note. You know, I really tried to emulate that 17th century Renaissance painting,
yeah.
A light. And I'm really a photojournalist, so I know I never set lights. Like, I'm very much somebody who understands and works with natural lights.
Right.
You know, sometimes a flash, but that's about as far as it goes, and that's what I love. But
yes.
I was like, okay. And I don't do portraits normally. Like, that's really not my thing.
Right. What is or was your thing?
Well, I worked...
Not to get you off the track. Don't forget the thought you were pursuing before I'm interrupting you.
I haven't really worked as a photographer for a very long time. I worked for the New York Times as a photo editor and a multimedia producer for almost 8 years, and for the Washington Post before that.
Okay.
And I didn't really discover photography until I went to graduate school in the States at UNC Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And I loved it. I fell in love with it, and I love it. But I was a music photographer, and I did. I worked for the art section of the New York Times as a photographer. But that's really, you know, my work has been very personal, and not, you know, my career, the stuff I get really paid for is more as an editor and an educator and a multimedia producer. This is like one of my first like serious stories in a very, very long time that I am putting out there.
Did you feel kind of vulnerable about it?
No.
Good.
You know, it's like I'm not, it's not, you know, that's, I think, what happens
mm-hmm.
when you're a journalist and you find a story that
you just do
it's bigger
it.
Than you. It's not, you know, it's not about me.
Right.
You know, it's not... a good story that needs to be told, and I'm just a tool.
Right, beautiful.
You know?
So you sit them down, you have a plan, you have a backdrop, and...
Right, and it's all natural light. Like, I decided in the end, I'm not going to say, I'm just going to find a window. So that's what the painters used to do, too. They would put their subject next to a window, and that's what cast that beautiful light, you know, on their faces. So it's not a big performance, you know.
Yes.
It's the backdrop, and then they sit down here. You know, they're not used to that, and they don't really like to be in the spotlight, so that's why I gave them books to hold.
Oh.
Because, first of all, it's kind of a symbolic thing of their, you know, of their scholarship.
Yes,
you know, which is, I think, a very important part of their qualifications, so to say, you know.
And, you know, whenever you see a picture of the Annunciation, Mary is reading a book when the angel comes.
That is so interesting. That was not in my consciousness. Maybe in my subconscious, but mm-hmm. not in my, I have to look that up.
Yeah, inevitably, she's sitting there with a book.
I consciously did not look at pictures, like when I researched it of Mary, because I did not want them to look like Mary.
Uh-huh,
you know,
how
Mary is depicted in that demure
yes.
kind of way. I wanted them to look like popes, you know, and like, you know, that was my intent. So I did not look at the depictions of Mary as inspirations.
You are. You're amazing. I love it. You know, I go into the city periodically, and would you mind if I like tried to connect with you someday?
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Just love to meet you.
I'm honored.
All my little nerve endings are tingling. You're the best.
Yes, you're too kind.
Can't thank you enough for this. This was just, I just don't know where to begin to edit it. It's all so great.
Oh, but just leave the theologian stuff to the people who know better about it than me.
We'll see.
Okay.
Hey, I'm going to let you go.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Judith. And good luck with whatever you do next and whatever you do with this material. And, you know, let's keep in touch.
Great. Thank you so much, Mary.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.